Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. What had been a very sleepy start to the FedEx Cup playoffs ended with all sorts of drama in Memphis at the FedEx St. Jude Championship. Hideki Matsuyama coughed up a five-shot lead and then recovered in time to win his first playoff event. Three players moved inside the all-important top 50 bubble heading into the BMW Championship. Rex, what stood out to you after the very first week of the FedEx Cup postseason?
It's kind of what we touched on last week. The idea that I just mentioned to you that we are a week away from the start of football, and you kind of scoffed at week zero on the college football schedule. So clearly you're not all in on FSU and Georgia Tech playing in Ireland to start the season. However, this was the last weekend before football starts. And the idea that you had something compelling, not just at the top of the leaderboard, Hideki stumbled a little bit, made it interesting. We'll get into that. But all the way down to the bottom, you had players trying to do what, well, Nick Dunlap was probably the best example. I did not realize that he was on the bubble or outside the bubble, I guess, before the start of the week. And then I had to kind of go back and look. He didn't get points for the American Express win is essentially what happened there. So that's why he was on the bubble. He has to make par on the last hole. He goes from having a chance to win the tournament through 16 holes on Sunday to getting to 18 and has to probably hit the drive of the week and somehow make a par on that hole just to advance to next week. And we've talked about how important this is, how important it is to finish inside the top 50, and how getting to the BMW now is the benchmark I think all tour players sort of set for themselves at the beginning of the year. Yeah, getting to East Lake is important and comes with a lot of cool stuff, but getting in that top 50 is probably the most important part. So you had excitement from the top to the bottom. That's pretty good. And again, I agree with Scottie Scheffler. It's not a season-long race. It does seem kind of silly sometimes. It's not perfect. I'm not quite sure it's ever going to be perfect, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's imperfect playoffs. We touched on it on the midweek podcast last week. The fact that you have a tour championship decided on the very same golf course every single year, to me, is a little bit asinine. But I'm with you. Even for a playoff system, which was basically concocted out of thin air, I think the FedEx St. Jude Championship showed the potential of what it could be. You have the top of the leaderboard with some of the biggest names in the sport, some guys who are certainly struggling, and then that top 50 bubble. Rex, I actually think that this is the most important week of the FedEx Cup season is what happens at the FedEx St. Jude Championship. Because now it's basically just gravy from BMW to the Tour Championship. But yes, that comes with, what, three exemptions in the major championships, and then the PGA Championship is basically top 100 in the world, which if you're getting to the Tour Championship, you're most likely to be in the top 100 anyway. So essentially you're getting in all the majors, but it gives such a head start on your 2025 by getting to the BMW, by getting in all eight of those signature events. The churn rate ended up being like 38%, which was actually on the high end of what the tour had projected. To me, that seems like a big time win. I like the playoffs. Again, it's imperfect, but I think this past week in Memphis showed exactly what it could be. How about Hideki Matsuyama, Rex? To me, this was incredible resolve, where you have the rules controversy on the seventh hole, where he was asked by a PGA Tour rules official about tapping down a pitch mark, which may or may not have been on his intended line. He was approached about it by Gary Young of the PGA Tour on the 12th hole. Now, Hideki denied that it had anything to do with what happened afterward on the back nine at TPC Southwind. It's hard not to see a correlation, though. His first three putt of the week on 12, a water ball on 14, he was actually very lucky to make a bogey from that, and then a messy short game on 15 led to a double bogey. For him to come back with birdies on 17 and 18, two of the toughest closing stretch holes on the PGA Tour, very impressive for Hideki to get win number 10 on the PGA Tour.
It was, and I'm sure it's deep down inside, it rattled him a little bit. But watching Hideki all of these years and now 10 tour victories later, it doesn't seem like he gets rattled by anything, to be honest with you. When you consider he started this week without his regular caddy, he started this week without his swing coach. They had to go back to Japan. There was a bag got stolen. There was some passport issues. So there was nothing normal about this week for Hideki. It looks like everything's always normal inside. Like, there's a lot of one-handed finishes that end up right in the middle of the fairway, in the middle of the green, which I still marvel at all the time. But he never seems to get sort of ahead of himself. He never seems to get rattled in those types of situations. And Nick Dunlap, who was paired with him on Sunday, sort of talked about it after the round, about how he handled himself going through that stretch when he is on cruise control. It's a dominant performance. He's going to sort of just sail to this victory. And next thing you know, he's not going to sail to victory. You're right. He's got to do something special on probably the two hardest holes, if not on the PGA Tour this year, then certainly in the playoffs. And for him to do it, I think that's a pretty cool way for it to finish up. And it kind of shows his resolve. I went back to Paris with the way he finished up to get onto the podium just to get that bronze medal. I think you prove so much to yourself in that situation. If you go back to Tokyo 3 years before that, the entire weight of the country was on his shoulders trying to get that medal. And so you kind of fast forward now, essentially 3 years from that moment in Tokyo to getting on the medal stand. He obviously didn't have his best stuff. And then this week, I think it shows the type of player he is and the type of person he is.
Yeah. And I think this summer has certainly been a reminder of just how fearsome this guy is when he is in full flight. I mean, he's one of the best ball strikers of his generation. You pair that with the best putting performance of his career, which he enjoyed over the first 3 days at TPC Southwind. And he did just enough on the final day, made that 26 footer on the 71st hole to get back in the lead, and then finished it off with a 6 footer on the final hole to win by 2 shots. Actually a very sneaky good year for Hideki Rex, not just the 62 to win at Riviera, not just the top 10s at the Players, the Memorial, the U.S. Open. You mentioned the bronze medal at the Olympics. This has been a player who has sort of been nagged by back injuries, neck injuries over the past couple years, still just 32. A lot of good golf, it appears, is in Hideki's future. I think he's certainly a player to watch for the remainder of these playoffs. Perhaps he can nab a FedEx Cup title, which has eluded him over the past couple of years. Sausage Finger, please go ahead.
Does it give you pause going to Royal Montreal in a few weeks for the President's Cup to think that the international team actually has a chance when you see how well okay, never mind.
No, not at all. And we'll get into this, because this is the final week of automatic qualifying for the President's Cup on both the U.S. and the international side. I mean, obviously, Hideki is the class of this international team. He's never fared particularly well, if memory serves, with a President's Cup record. The automatic qualifiers, if it ended right now for the internationals, would be Hideki, Tom Kim, Sung Jae Im, Jason Day, Adam Scott, and Ben Ahn. No, I'm not sure that's necessarily going to be striking any fear in a U.S. team, led most certainly.
Never mind. We have plenty of time to address that. Forget it. I'm sorry Shuffler. I brought it up. That was silly. I don't know what I was thinking.
We can get to that at the end of the podcast. Rex, you mentioned also the top 50 drama. Just three players. There was a lot of moving and shaking, a lot of projections, certainly drama on that 72nd hole. It seemed like everyone was doing their best to kick away the tournament. It ended up being three players who moved in: Nick Dunlap, Victor Hovland, and Eric Cole for the second year in a row. I was a little bit surprised, Rex, by the quality of the players who missed out now, who will not be continuing their postseason. Tom Kim was the first man out, world number 18. Remember, he lost in that Travelers playoff to Scottie Scheffler. Obviously, his year could have looked a lot different had he gotten through there. Maverick McNealy gave himself a chance. He was 12th in the PGA Tour in strokes gained total. That's one of the most complete players on the PGA Tour, is not moving on as well. Nick Taylor is a player who's on the FedEx Cup bubble. Jake Knapp was a winner earlier this year in Mexico. I do think when you look at sort of the players moving on, the PGA of America has to be thrilled to see Keegan Bradley get that 50th and final spot, ensuring that next year's U.S. Ryder Cup captain is going to have some face time with all the best and brightest players on the PGA Tour and all the signature events next year, being able to keep a close eye on them.
I think it is, and I guess you went to the heart of the matter. Victor Hovland was very impressive because of what we've seen out of him so far this year, or not seen out of him so far this year, and it seems like he's turned a corner. Certainly that finish is inspiring, and then the fact that it's funny. I was talking with a player the week of the Wyndham Championship about this, and this player finished inside the top 125, but not the top 70. And he was kind of complaining about how bad his season has been. And as he's talking, I was looking at his results, and I kind of had to come back and say, no, it really hasn't. Like, based on historically what you wanted to do as a PGA Tour player, 125 was always the mark. The PGA Tour just moved the goalposts and made it more difficult to sort of get into the playoffs. So now 70 is that manufactured number. And it is funny, because when you think of Victor Hovland, I would have thought, no, he's probably not going to make it to the BMW Championship. If he makes it to the playoffs, that'll be a good result based on what he's been through so far this season. However, well, a lot like what he did last year, at about this time, he seems to be playing some of his best golf. He seems to be getting his confidence back, and he seems to have a better understanding of where his swing is, because it wasn't there. I think we've talked about it. Maybe Valhalla was where he might have turned a corner, but he still couldn't put it together consistently. If he's able to do this over these next 2 weeks, it would be pretty cool to see him play his way into Eastlake.
Yeah, this is the Victor Hovland of old. Was fourth last week at TPC Southwind in strokes gained tee to green. That was his best ball striking week of the year, even better than what we saw at the PGA Championship at Valhalla, where, again, he'd reunited with Joe Mayo. Everyone thought that it was going to be back. He's not played particularly well this summer prior to Memphis. He did have, Victor Hovland did, a big miss off 17T. Some old habits that cost him there, and then a bad bunker shot was not clean around the green at TPC Southwind as well. I think that's sort of easy to overlook. He's been putting so much time into his full swing, making sure he's hitting sort of that bleeder cut, that bullet cut that he loves so much. I think he'll obviously address his short game again in the offseason once he finally gets his full swing where he wants to. You mentioned, Rex, off the top, Nick Dunlap. And this is a player I think we need to give his flowers to, because we talked a couple of times on this podcast throughout the year about the rough patch that he endured after winning the American Express as an amateur. Dunlap needed 15 more events in order to get a top 10 finish again on the PGA Tour after that initial win. I really like the way that he's played this summer. He started working with performance coach Josh Gregory, who works with a number of players on the PGA Tour. He's made some big strides with his short game, which was the biggest weakness in his game coming out of college and amateur golf. He's improved his course management. He's improved sort of his scheduling and the time and the amount of practice that he's doing week of. And now he has played well at the Memorial. He obviously picked up the win opposite field event, the Barracuda. Now he was in the final group and performed well, top five finish against the best 70 players on the PGA Tour. It would have been, I think, a tragedy had Nick Dunlap not made it to the BMW Championship with two wins this season. As you mentioned, received zero FedEx Cup points for that Amex win. The fact that he is at the age of 20, despite not getting points for that, despite winning an opposite field event with reduced FedEx Cup points, I think it shows you just the caliber of this kid.
No, and this is going to be playing the result, because you and I went round and round about this when he won the American Express, about what did he make the right decision. I think you were sort of leaning into the idea that maybe he stays at Alabama for one more year. Maybe he goes and plays the U.S. Amateur. Maybe he does all of the things that clearly were important to him. I thought that was ridiculous, because based on what he had accomplished and what he had laid out before him, like we've talked about it endlessly, this was probably the most important year in the history of the PGA Tour to play well. Because if you can, again, get inside that top 50, you can pretty much write your own ticket. And even with those churn rate numbers that you pointed out, you got to play really, really bad if you're inside that magical top 50 mark to play your way out. In Nick's case, he'd been given this gift. He'd earned it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, winning the American Express as an amateur. But this was a gift that he had to take advantage of. And there was probably points of during that stretch that you pointed out where he really struggled and he didn't seem comfortable. And it took a long time. When you look at how young he is, but it took some time for him to figure out how to be a touring professional. He went from essentially zero to 100 miles an hour. You went from playing college golf, which is not comparable to playing the PGA Tour, in a matter of days. And that was really, really difficult. I still say he made the right decision, but I think you can look back now and play the result and probably make an argument that maybe he could have stayed one more year, different time, different circumstances. I could see that argument. Not with this, though. Not with the way he was able to pull it out.
Yeah, I think he's obviously learning on the fly. I mean, so much was thrown at him. Keep in mind, I mean, he's playing in the final group with Hideki Matsuyama at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, the first playoff event on the PGA Tour. At the exact same time, he should have been defending his title at the U.S. Amateur. I mean, that is how much has occurred over the past couple of months. I've been really impressed. It sounds like his PGA Tour peers have been really impressed by the adjustment and the transition he has made as well. I mean, this was a player who sort of was dealing with, not necessarily survivor's guilt, but he left his teammates high and dry at Alabama, did not even make the NCAA championship. He's still living in Tuscaloosa. He's trying to figure out what the practice schedule is going to be. Keep in mind, he's 20 years old. He doesn't have a whole lot of peers on the PGA Tour, people to hang out with, but it sounds like he's had some good mentors on the PGA Tour in that department. I think when he looks back, this will be a hugely important year for his development, learning how to be a professional, addressing some of the weaknesses that he has in his game with consistencies and some of the short game work that he's now addressed with performance coach Josh Gregory. Rex, he has been a little bit inconsistent this summer, but if you're Jim Furyk, captain of the U.S. President's Cup team, right now, Nick Dunlap is not inside the top 25 in President's Cup standings. That is, of course, without the getting any sort of points for the American Express win. If you're Jim Furyk, are you taking a long, hard look at Nick Dunlap for this American team, sort of building for the future, getting him integrated into that Team USA culture?
We just had a really good laugh, yes, about the international team and trying to make the argument that somehow this is going to be a competitive match because we haven't seen a competitive match in a long time. Yeah, Jim Furyk has the world in front of him. I mean, it's his oyster. He can literally look at that as deep down on the list as he possibly wants to. And I don't think anyone's going to second guess him unless, of course, he loses, which I don't think that's really realistically going to happen. But yeah, I think Jim can probably do a lot of different things with this team if he really wanted to. If you look at sort of the way the team is shaping up, at least the automatic picks right now, I think it's a pretty fresh-faced team. I think he's going to already have some rookies on that team. The idea that maybe he would want to lean into some veterans has been thrown out there. I don't particularly buy that simply because I think you have enough young players that you could field a very competitive team and just see what you have. Like, I'm not saying the President's Cup needs to be a warm-up for the Ryder Cup, but certainly you can put some pieces together and see, does Nick Dunlap fit with some of these younger players going into Montreal, seeing what the situation is like. It's going to be a crowd probably not like they saw in Rome and certainly not like you saw in Paris for the Ryder Cup, but it's probably going to be the most partisan crowd I think you're going to find, at least for the international team and the President's Cup. So, yeah, I think you could absolutely look down that list at Nick Dunlap and even beyond.
Yeah, I would give him some pretty strong consideration, Rex, because you look at what this U.S. team could, should look like. Sahith is right now, again, in the sixth and final automatic spot. This would be his first U.S. team appearance. Russell Henley is, again, a player who has not won since November 2022 on the PGA Tour. Max Homa has struggled mightily, just finished DFL in Memphis. It has not been a good summer at all. Right now, he's in the nine spot with the popularity that he has among other PGA Tour players. You'd be hard pressed to leave him off the team. But again, Max Homa all the way down to 19th in the world ranking. Wouldn't be totally surprised if Jim Furyk makes a very hard call and leaves him home. Brian Harman has not done a whole lot since that close call at the Players Championship. Sam Burns did sneak inside the top 12, given his friendship and experience in this format with Scottie Scheffler. You do like his chances. And again, Akshay Bhatia, I would love to see Akshay, the lanky left-hander, right now is in the 12th spot. I'd love to see him get a look as they sort of build towards a future. Again, that would leave Justin Thomas potentially on the cutting room floor, Billy Horschel, who has continued to play some great golf this summer, on the cutting room floor, Cameron Young, one of the longest hitters on the PGA Tour, on the cutting room floor, as well as Davis Thompson, Nick Dunlap, and sort of those next generation players who probably deserve a spot, but it's getting late early for those guys. What else, Rex, stood out from the week at Memphis? Whether it was Jay Monahan's scrum earlier in the week, Xander Schauffele and Scottie Scheffler continued to do what they do, or Rory McIlroy putting up an absolute stinker, finished nearly dead last.
I want to talk about the commissioner of scrum because I think there were some interesting comments that came out of that. However, I'm going to go with, and here's the fun game. I was asked this in a radio interview that I did over the weekend. If I had to give you three names and you had to just pick one, you can only pick one, who do you think had a worse week at TPC Southwind? Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, or Max Homa? I watched a lot of the early coverage because they weren't on the late coverage. None of them played well enough to make it to the late coverage. I watched a lot of the early coverage this week, and it's a close race between all three of them based on who had the worst week. And that's saying something because Rory probably played the worst tournament at least this year. Maybe you can go back a couple more years. It's clear that Jordan Spieth probably should have walked away before this week, and because the wrist just isn't working. I don't know what's wrong with Max Homa. I can't pick one of the three because it looked like all three of them were serving some sort of sentence for some sort of crime that they had committed walking around that place for 72 holes.
This was the greatest sort of indicator of why no cut events do not work. Yeah. Because you have guys who don't have anything to play for. I mean, Rory dropped to what, fifth or sixth? The FedEx Cup standings with arguably his worst performance of the entire year. Jordan Spieth said afterward on Sunday that he is going to be undergoing wrist surgery, quote, ASAP, because it's about a 3 to 4 month recovery from what he said is a pretty common surgery. That would put him potentially needing an invite to the Hero World Challenge in December if he wants to push it, or potentially we will not see him on the PGA Tour until the Sony Open at Wailea or the American Express potentially in mid-January. So long to Mr. Spieth. We do hope he gets back healthy, because there should be plenty of good golf there. Max Homa is completely lost. Remember back to the Open Championship when he was emotional after making that long putt on the 18th hole to make the cut on the number. He said he was sort of doubting himself. He was putting too much pressure on himself. That sort of seemed like a cathartic moment. It was clear that this is a guy who is just completely lost at this point. Again, it's going to be a very difficult decision for Jim Furyk to make, because the justification for Max Homa is, well, guys like him. He played well at the Ryder Cup. Like, what is the justification right now if you're taking Max Homa? Because his world ranking slipping, his automatic qualifying position is slipping, does not have a top 10 finish on the PGA Tour in several months at this point.
I don't think you can justify that. I mean, look, he's just playing bad golf, and maybe he gives the captain something to think about. Either that's in his play starting in the fall, because I think he has one or two events to play before we actually go to Royal Montreal, or just trying to talk the captain into it. But I can't imagine how he ended up getting picked. I will say this, and I just want to touch on Rory before we leave, because the idea, he hit a drive on Friday when he was clearly angry, and he hit it so far left on 18 that had it not clipped a tree, it probably would have killed somebody, because it was heading straight into the crowd. And again, to your point, you're right. I think events like this, and maybe the playoffs is a little bit different, but this is an indication of what happens when you don't have a cut. And you're right. And you have guys who are out there who have virtually nothing to play for. They clearly don't have a game, or in the case of Jordan Spieth, he's injured, probably shouldn't have been out there playing those final 36 holes. It's not a good product. I don't think it's good for the players either.
Yeah, Roy dropped only from third to fifth. Yeah. In the playoff standings. Again, they're all heading to Castle Pines, which is a virtual unknown for all the players in the field. We're not surprised, I guess, if Rory can find his game. He was nearly dead last in ball striking and putting. That is a very bad combination. If somehow he can find a swing fix over the next couple of days, contend at Castle Pines, all of a sudden, he's probably in the number two spot heading into Eastlake, where he historically has such a great record. I was impressed, Rex, by Xander Schauffele and Scottie Scheffler. I continue to do what they do. Xander shot a 62 in the final round to tie for second in Memphis. Scotty was fourth. I think Eastlake is going to be a lot of fun in what is setting up to be a head-to-head showdown there. And I know we touched on it on the Wednesday podcast about Xander's dominance at this golf course, even though it has been renovated now by Andrew Green over the past 12 months. Keep in mind, between a head-to-head of those two players, Xander Schauffele is 43 under par at Eastlake over the past three editions of the Tour Championship. That's not including the staggered start. That is like literally what he is shooting. He's shooting 43 under par over the last three editions at Eastlake. Scottie Scheffler in that same span, just 13 under par. Xander Schauffele has been 30 shots better than Scottie heading into the Tour Championship over the past 3 years. A two-shot margin, if it comes to pass, is absolutely nothing. I still think Xander Schauffele is going to win the FedEx Cup. You want to touch on Jay Monahan, a scrum with reporters at TPC Southwind. The first time Jay has talked to reporters, I think, since the Players' Championship in March. What stood out to you about what the commissioner had to say, Rex?
He spoke. He did another scrum at the Travelers Championship the week after the U.S. Open. There was a quote that I wanted to get to, and it's very quick, so I'm going to read it. And the question is, does the release of the schedule, the PGA Tour schedule last week, now indicate that there's not going to be anything with LIV, at least through next year, 26 or 27? The commissioner's response was, I think that's fair. That's telling to me, because where we are, I keep going back to the idea that there was a December 31st deadline.
Yeah.
Last year, December 31st, to turn the framework agreement into something definitive. And we're clearly nowhere close to that. And it's clear that, at least from the PGA Tour's perspective, that they're completely comfortable, that the commissioner and the people around him are completely comfortable not having a deal, at least in the short term. When you start talking about 26 and 27, as that's where they're starting to look, I think it's become less and less likely that we're going to end up with any kind of arrangement. And I've been really, really clear on this one. I don't think going down this path is the right way for the game, because I think a fractured game only is bad for the fans. It's probably only good for a handful of players, to be quite frank with you. It's bad for the media partners. It's bad for the corporate partners. It's bad for pretty much everybody, unless you're one of those players who are getting paid. And that comment, and again, this is me probably reading a little bit too much into it, but based on what I just said, there was a December 31st last year deadline. And then now he's looking to 27 and beyond. That's shocking to me.
There was the December 31st deadline. Then remember Keith Pelley, the outgoing CEO of the European Tour, said, you know what? I want to stay on till April to make sure that we can get this deal across the finish line. That has not happened. It certainly seems like the tenor of conversations is just 2 months ago, Rex, that you were flying from Pinehurst up to Connecticut for the Travelers Championship, thinking that a deal was about to be announced. That did not happen. Rory McIlroy talked to reporters before the tournament at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, said he's, of course, as a member of the transaction subcommittee, has not had a call since June in 2 months. Yes, the business folks are still apparently talking Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays with the PIF. The players, though, nothing has been brought to them over 2 months. It certainly seems like the tenor of conversations has significantly gone worse. It does seem also, Rex, like there is a huge sort of gap or divide in what the PGA Tour is thinking and what the fans and I think Rory McIlroy and other top players want. Because I thought the Bryson DeChambeau US Open win was supposed to be this seminal moment where, look, the PGA Tour desperately needs this guy. Like we're heading in opposite paths, and that does not do anyone any good, but particularly the fans who are harmed in this sort of situation. I understand it from a business perspective. If you're the PGA Tour, you have some players' contracts on live that are up at the end of this year. You have some big name players who are going to be up at the end of 2025. You have some major exemptions and qualifications that are going to be expiring for some players. I understand it from a business perspective, trying to get the most leverage of a deal. But waiting two or three more years to potentially provide a pathway back for players, when keep in mind, Rex, this was the first event of the PGA Tour's signature series, right? The FedEx Cup playoffs, it's the postseason, everything they've built and marketed at the exact same time that you had Hideki Matsuyama doing with Victor Hovland and Nick Dunlap and Xander Schauffele and Scottie Scheffler, like the biggest and best of the PGA Tour. At the exact same time, you had a playoff unfolding on LIV where Brooks Koepka was outdoing Jon Rahm at Greenbrier, a former PGA Tour venue. That should have been lost on no one. Like, what are we doing? The PGA Tour could be so much stronger with those players. LIV could be so much stronger if on an off week where you're not up against a PGA Tour event, their events could be so much stronger if you're sort of borrowing and sharing the same players. What is best for the business is not best for the fans, and I feel like that's getting lost in all of this.
Oh, I don't agree with that. I don't think it's either or in this particular case. I think it could be good for business and good for the fans and the corporate partners and the media partners and everyone else if you could find a way to get the two sides together. To your point, you're right.
Like, it's absolutely best for the business if the two sides are together. From a PGA Tour perspective, it's clear their thinking is not, let's just ride this out. We like the signature event model. We're happy with the players that we do have. Let LIV sort of do its own thing, and maybe it'll just die in the vine. That's clearly what their thinking is.
And we're going to go on Golf Today later today and sort of probably touch on this because Eamon Lynch wrote a column about it on golfweek.com. And he kind of pointed out what I thought was an interesting edge here, that you have bankers on both sides for the PGA Tour with SSG, the Strategic Sports Group, and obviously the Saudis when it comes to LIV Golf. And the future of the game is based on what those bankers think is what's best for business. And right now, it's clear that at least one of those sides doesn't think it's best for business for them to come together. You're right. I mean, I don't think anybody can ignore the fact that Jon Rahm and Brooks Koepka were locked in a playoff that was also compelling the exact same time that you were doing this big finish. That, you, as you and I have pointed out over the last week, this is probably the most important event on the PGA Tour schedule because of top 50 and everything that we've talked about it. I'm not saying it was overshadowed, but it certainly takes away from what you were trying to accomplish here. You pointed out Travelers Championship, got on a plane, flew up there. It was impossible not to sort of embrace the obvious that, yes, this is a signature event. Yes, Travelers has put up a lot of money. Yes, this is supposed to be one of the special moments that the PGA Tour has created. The most popular player and probably the best player in the game at that moment, Bryson DeChambeau, was playing in another event. And that, again, not overshadowing what was happening on the PGA Tour, but it was certainly taking away from that. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. The idea, and I had this conversation with one of our colleagues a few weeks ago when we were in Paris, the idea that the PGA Tour's philosophy on this seems to be the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia will just get tired. They'll get tired of losing money. They'll get tired of investing in a product that doesn't seem to resonate across the board like they wanted to. They're just going to get tired or bored or decide that this isn't a good business investment. Maybe. I have no idea. You have no idea what their motivations are on this front. But your business model, my counter to this is, your business model is you're just going to hope the other side gets tired? That to me doesn't seem like a sustainable or wise strategy.
Especially at the expense of alienating and frustrating the PGA Tour's fan base, who desperately wants to see all of the best players back together again. Again, I'm sure we will discuss this topic in greater detail on Golf Today, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. Catch the re-airs if you guys miss it. BMW Championship is this week at Castle Pines, the old international. Right? So I'm sure you remember Rich Beam, Steve Lowry, some great blasts from the past that you will be playing. PGA Tour players will. At 8,000 feet of elevation. They got the TrackMan. They got other machines. You're going to hear a lot about it. I really don't think it'll be all that big of a storyline once play actually starts. They just played in Chapultepec, the WGC event in Mexico. Yes, it was fun. Yes, it's great to see 400-yard drives, but I don't think it actually affected the integrity of the competition at all once it gets going. There was something, Rex, that we left in the cutting room floor on Wednesday that I did want to circle back to. I know it's very personal and near to dear to your heart. We have touched on your pickleball injury and how you have a torn meniscus. You received a cortisone shot. You sound better. A steroid shot, excuse me. In which Golf Channel HR will be testing you for roids. How do you feel? What have you done to attack the day now that you're feeling great?
I wanted to bring this up. Because I'm going to throw this out to the audience because everyone's pretty good about responding to things. Do you think getting the steroid shot, which was the day after I got home from Paris, do you think that is the reason why I didn't have any jet lag whatsoever? Like I slept through the night. I woke up at a normal time, went to bed at a normal time. Don't get me wrong. I was tired at night when I went to sleep. And then I would wake up and just did everything for the last week. I mean, I did everything. I worked out. I'm not playing pickleball again, but I'm playing golf. I'm working in the yard, like all of the things. Do you think that that's the response? Because if it is, I think I'm going to do this on a regular basis.
No, I also don't think that's healthy. I don't think that would be advised by any sort of medical professional. No, I am curious to see how long these shots last.
I was like, told.
Does it last?
The first one lasts longer.
Last 6 to 12 months? Like, what's the deal?
Well, the first one, this is the first one I've ever taken. And he said it could last, it's probably going to last between 6 and 12 months. And by that time, and the thing is, I was supposed to have surgery. So there was a little bit of confusion. My doctor originally scheduled me to have surgery the day after I got back. And I showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And instead of having the surgery, a new doctor came in and just said he felt like surgery was a little aggressive at that point. He wanted to give me the shot, see how I felt 6 to 8 weeks. Actually, I have an appointment the Tuesday we get back from Royal Montreal. So I'll let you know then. But that shot, everything else in my body hurts because I've overdone it, obviously. Knee feels 100%.
Medical professionals, please feel free to weigh in at the bottom of our YouTube video. If Rex starts to get angry, if he starts exhibiting signs of roid rage, you guys know the drill. Be sure to alert Golf Channel HR if Rex shows any signs of that. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. I'll be at Castle Pines starting on Tuesday, departing Thursday, before I head to Connecticut to co-host Golf Today during Tour Championship Week. So we will be doing the preview podcast from altitude, Rex. 8,000 feet, I have heard. What an adjustment it will be. Hopefully I can sustain and not have altitude sickness on Wednesday when I join you for the preview podcast. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Have a great start to BMW Championship.